Okay, good to see everybody. We are on Zion Omid Aleph, that is 7A. And by the way, good news, I finally called up Optimum this week and they restarted my internet. And if you are hearing me right now, then that means it worked. So, and I see you guys. So I don't want to jinx this, but God willing, my Zoom has been working for me properly since they did that. I see a thumbs up from Susan. Very good. So, God willing, it should stay well and we should have a regular shiur this evening. Now, before we actually delve into the Gemara, I promised you all that we would pick up on a Tosfos from last week on Vav Amud Beis on 6b. If you recall, we were debating the merits of whether in a leap year, like right now, we should observe Purim in Adar Rishon, the first month of Adar, or Adar Sheni in the second month of Adar. And even though Halacha Lemaisa we observe in the second month of Adar, the rationale given for why I would think to prefer the first month is a principle of Ein Mavirin al HaMitzvos, that when you are presented with a mitzvah, like one mitzvah and another, we'll talk about precisely that in a moment, the first mitzvah that comes to your hand, you should do that first. That's why there's complications. If I reach for my shel rosh, my head tefillin, before my shel yad, we run into halakhic complications because even though we should put the shel yad on first, but you don't want to just pass over the shel rosh. So this is a principle that comes up in halakha a lot. We talked about how it might be related to the idea of zrizin magdim in the mitzvos. Also, the idea that after Yom Kippur, people put up their sukkahs right away. So I just want to do the Tosos on Vav Beis on the bottom. Mistar time to mitzvos. And you'll forgive me. Generally, when I go through the Gemara, I try to explain every detail step by step. But I'm just going to kind of do this in 2 minutes as Tosos and, take out of it what you will, okay? Mistaver time at Dima Vir al HaMitzvah. So again, Tosas Bavam Abays, Mistaver. So Mikan Koshalat Ramim Perik Ezum Makoman. If we ever learn Meseches Zvachim, which talks about different, Zvachim, different offerings in the Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara Dekamar Shayari Hadam HaYishovich Al Yisoma Ravisha Mizbeach, that the blood, the remaining blood from the offerings, was meant to be poured on the western foundation of the altar. The Daik Taim Adamar Kra El Yisod HaMizbeach, and it derives it hermeneutically from a drasha, from a pasuk. However, we generally ask this question. Generally, there's something I could deduce logically. I prefer to deduce something logically rather than having to have a drasha. A drasha is only given to me. God only indicates something through the psukim if I couldn't logically infer it otherwise. So the question is, Ukasha hasam lamalikra? Typically, the imavirin al hamitzvos. So we can ask, what's going on over there? Why do I need a special drasha? Just apply the general Talmudic principle of imavirin al hamitzvos. The first mitzvah that comes to you, whatever you approach first, you should do it right away. If you're walking out of the heichal, out of the sanctum of the Beis HaMikdash, you're going to hit the western side of the altar first. So I don't need a drasha. I don't need the Torah to hint to me a way to tell me that I should pour the blood on the western side of the Mizbeach. I know that I take the first opportunity to do a mitzvah. You know where else this comes up? Is a you may have heard of this case. We actually did this, I think, in the Monday night class. There is a classic tshuva of the Radvaz about if I am in jail, I'm incarcerated, and I'm given 1 day of freedom, I could go out and do mitzvos. Do I wait until perhaps Yom Kippur to go to shul on Yom Kippur? Or do I just take advantage right away? And the Rava says is that no, you take your the first opportunity you have to do a mitzvah, You jump on that opportunity. Emavir nala mitzvos. I don't remember offhand if he actually invokes that line, but I'm fairly certain that's the principle in hand. So the question is, why don't we invoke it here? So one answer that Tosos gives is the Yesh Mefarshim, Delo Shaykh Lememar Emavir nala mitzvos, Elahega Sheyesh Lefanav Shtei mitzvos, Sheyesh Lelazos Kodam Osad Depagamaresha. So when do we say Emavir nala mitzvos? When I have two distinct mitzvos in front of me. When I have two separate mitzvos, so then, you know, I'm trying to think of a good example of two separate mitzvos over here. Someone help me out. Well, it'll be two mitzvos that might come. You know, I have the mitzvah, Bikur Cholim that comes up first, and I have a mitzvah of giving charity. So who comes to me first? Is there someone who's sick who needs to be visited? So, you know, I'm just think of an example where there's two distinct, well, okay, they're both under chesed, maybe. Okay, not the best example. Forget two distinct mitzvos. So then I prefer the mitzvah opportunity that comes to me first. However, over here in the case of the Mizbeach, it's all the same mitzvah. It's about pouring the blood. The question just is which part of the Mizbeach to pour it on. But whether you pour on the western side, the eastern side, excuse me, they're not, it's the same mitzvah. The question is just how do I go about performing that mitzvah? However, Tosus rejects this because the Zaino, the Haga Lake Ela Mitzah Achas, Bafilhaki Mifari Shatamishum the Ein Ma'avirin. However, if you look at our Gemara, that's patently not true, Tosus says. Because in our Gemara, we are willing to accept that Adar Rishon, the first month of Adar, is when we should be observing Purim. The only reason we don't is because there's a superseding consideration of being so make geula le geula of Purim to Pesach. But even though we don't paskin that way, everyone agrees upon the principle of Eim Avir Na Mitzvos. It makes sense. So here, there's a mitzvah of observing Purim. And yet we're, even though there's not two mitzvos at play, it's not like if I observe Purim in the second month, it's fundamentally a different mitzvah if I perform it in the first month. It's fundamentally the same mitzvah. The only question is when I observe it. And yet we still invoke the principle of Ein Mavirin Al HaMitzvos to tell me that maybe I should observe Purim in the first month. So we see the notion of saying Ein Mavirin Al HaMitzvos is only when there's two completely separate mitzvos. That's just not true, Tosos says. There's more to the Tosos, but we should probably get to our Gemara for tonight. But I just thought that that was a very important concept, and I didn't want to leave that stone left unturned. Okay, any questions?
All right. Actually, Rabbi, I had a question. Yeah. I'm sorry, I missed the class, but I listened to the recording last week. It was this discussion of more or less, don't fight with a bad guy if he's on a roll, if he's having a good day, or he's having a good week, or he's having a lot of luck. What's the Gemara really teaching here? That is that there is luck that Hashem is looking favorably on him? Or, I mean, what's the treatment of luck in the Gemara?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Paul. So Paul's bringing back up from last week. We talked about how, basically, like you said, if the wicked person is on a roll, things are going well for him. The Gemara talks about maybe, depending who you are, depending on the timing, you shouldn't pick a fight with them. So I'll give you an example. Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid to pick a fight with Og Melech HaBashan, the giant king. Now, what was Moshe Rabbeinu afraid of? You know, clearly Moshe Rabbeinu was a bigger tzaddik than Og, but because Og that one time tipped off Avram Avinu to help him with get Lot back, he was worried that there's a principle in Jewish theology that even if someone's wicked, if they've done a few good things, then they get the reward in this world and not the world to come. Whereas the righteous, generally, their main reward is waiting for them in the world to come. It's infinite as opposed to finite. So the concern is, since Rishayim get the reward in this world and things are clearly going well for this guy, you might not be successful because God has to give his reward somewhere. You know, he might be a wicked person, but you know, there was that one time that he helped that old lady cross the street, and so God has to reward him somewhere for it. God prefers in Olam Hazeh as opposed to Olam Haba. So I think that's the idea. I wouldn't say luck necessarily, but maybe luck. I'm not exactly sure how to phrase it. Maybe. Okay, very good. So let's go to our featured presentation for tonight. We are in the Gemara in Zayin Amud Aleph, that is 7a. And what we did last time was we had one version of the conversation between the sages and Esther. Esther asked the Chachamim, Kavuni Ledoros, canonize Megillas Esther into Tanakh. And they say, wait, there'll be anti-Semitism. They'll see, you know, they'll read especially the end of the Megillah. And she says, it's too late. It's already in their history books. I made sure of it. So if you're worried about anti-Semitism, don't worry. You're already going to get anti-Semitism. That's what she says. That's seemingly. So Esther seemingly gets canonized. But as we're going to see tonight, there are a number of books that we have in Tanakh. But at least during the Talmudic era, it wasn't so clear-cut that they were meant to be canonized. So you're going to see some interesting discussions here tonight. I mean, I hope it's always interesting discussions, but very fundamental discussions to how the Tanakh was formed. So we're up to the words Rav v'Rav Chanina. I'm willing to bet it's still the first page in Art Scroll. Yep, okay. Rav v'Rav Chanina, Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Chaviva, Masnu. So this group of rabbis were sitting together and they were teaching the following halacha. But before we get to what the halacha or the story is that they taught, a quick parenthetical. Some say whenever you see these four guys learning together, you should take out Rav Yochanan. It's an error. It should say Rabbi Yonasan. For our intents and purposes, there were four rabbis who were learning together. Kisvuni Ledoros. Esther writes to the sages and she requests, please write me down for future generations. Sholchula, they responded, Halokastavti lo shlishim shlishim velo ribeim. It says in the Torah three times, not four times, regarding writing down and recording the what Amalek did to us and our history with Amalek. If you look at Rashi, Rashi explains, what does it mean, Shlishim? B'shlosha mekomos yeshon lahaskim l'chamas Amalek, b'sefer, v'elishimos, b'sefer elishimos, u'b'mishnah Torah, u'b'sefer Shmuel. So we have once in Shemos that we read recently. Then we have in Sefer Devarim. And then in Sefer Shmuel, which we talked about in our Monday night class, we're talking about Amalek, where Shaul was supposed to kill Agag. He didn't really do it. Only three times in Tanakh, we're supposed to record our history with Amalek. Not a fourth time. Now, what does Megillas Esther have to do with Amalek? Because, as we'll see later on, Haman is supposedly a descendant of Amalek. So the issue is, Esther wants Megillas Esther to be written down for future generations, but we are only supposed to make reference to Amalek three times to our war with Amalek. So, Ad Shematzu Lo Mikra Kasuba Torah, but they found a basis to include Esther's Megillah nonetheless. So Zos Zichron B'Sefer. So there's a pasuk that says that that you should write this remembrance in the book. Sov zos masha kosev kan. Sorry. Uba Mishnah Torah. So the first part is telling you to include Shmos and Dvarim. When Amalek appears in the Torah and Sefer Shmos and Sefer Dvarim, don't count that as two separate times. The Torah is all one book. So that's the first time. Zichron, Masha Kosev B'Neviim. The word Zichron comes to tell me Sefer Shmuel. And the word B'Sefer, Masha Kosev B'Megillah. So I have a base to include Megillas Esther. And by the way, this is a Machlokis Tanayim. This is on the Taniyitic level. Ketanayim. So Zos, Masha Kosev Kan Zichron, Masha Kosev Mishnah Torah. B'Sefer, Masha Kosev B'Neviim. Divrei Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua is of the first opinion. that Megillas Esther should not be included in Tanakh. Rabbi Elazar Amudai Omer, Sov Zos, Masha Kosev Khan, Umishna Torah, Zichron Masha Kosev Neviim, and B'Sefer Masha Kosev B'Megillah. Whereas the other opinion of Rabbi Elazar reasoned the other way, that Megillas Esther could be included. Point being is, depending how you parse the Pasuk and how you interpret it, there's a machlokis if Megillas Esther is actually supposed to be included in the Tanakh. Now, you never would have assumed that. Now imagine, you open up a Koren Tanakh, you open an art scroll, and one has one. That's not true. They all have Megillas Esther in it. But it's fascinating that what we assume as a given today was not a given back when it was first being formed. Okay?
We once had a speaker at shul at a good who was an expert in Asian people who have migrated early. So there was a group from India that didn't actually have, I think, the Megillah. Maybe it was Han. No, isn't it? They didn't have the Megillah. Is that right? Does anybody remember this? Or was that a good? This Indian Tanakh did not have the Megillah in it.
Interesting.
Which was very, I'm pretty sure that's true. I mean, because Hanukkah is obviously not even in the Megillah, so in the Tanakh.
I remember hearing something about they didn't have some stuff, in India because they fled too early.
Interesting.
It's the Megillah. Yeah. So
was it
before? This was the Cochin, Cochin community is what it's talking about. It supposedly came as early as the time of Shlomo HaMelech, which was way before.
A lot of books that would have made it.
Wow,
so a lot of ksuvim. Interesting. Yeah, so I mean, this I think Andrew, it's a great point. I think that speaks to it about how some of these later books that were put into ksuvim, we're going to see momentarily, it's not so clear cut. Here we go.
Well, and these communities wouldn't have stuff like kashrut either because it was developed afterward.
Oh, you mean
to the extent it is now?
You mean like rabbinic Judaism in general?
Right, the Gemara, right. They would have the prohibited foods, but they wouldn't have.
They wouldn't have this Gemara right in front of us, Maseches Megillah. They wouldn't have. And I think that's actually what happened when certain communities made Aliyah to Israel, and they had no conception of like what the Mishnah, what the Gemara was.
Right.
Fascinating. Okay. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Esther Ina Matama Siyadai. This is just an important background. Back in the day, what happened was that people, they would store their food and they would store their scrolls in the same place. The issue was mice like food. And so when these critters were going for the food in the pantry, they desecrated the holy scriptures that were found in the pantry as well. And so basically, your food in general, you don't want your food becoming tameh. So the Chachamim said, this is like ironic. It's very counterintuitive. Our Svarim are holy. They're holy books by definition. But they declared that anyone who touches the scrolls directly will become tameh, ritually impure. That way, you won't want to store it with your food. That way, the scrolls would not become defiled by the animals. So what you see is the phraseology of the Gemara is not going to say this is included in Tanakh, this is not included in Tanakh, but you'll see Amar Shmuel, Esther Eina Metame Es Hayadayim. The book of Esther does not Metame Es Hayadayim. It does not render one ritually impure. Meaning to say, since it doesn't render one ritually impure, it means it didn't make the cut for Tanakh. Because only bona fide, canonized books in Tanakh have their power to render one ritually impure. I just want to make sure that's clear. That's going to be like a code word for being canonized that will come up. Is that part clear? Any scroll that can render one tameh, that's code word for saying it's part of the canon of Tanakh. Good? Okay, good. So the question is, Lemaimra, the Savar Shmuel Esther, La Baruch HaKodesh, Demra? Wait, are we assuming that Esther wasn't written by Ruach HaKodesh? Good diak over here to notice. You ever wonder, there are three parts of Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, Uksuvim. Well, why do we split into three? Just like have the Bible. Why do I need three parts to the Bible? So the most simple understanding the Rambam says is the level of transmission. The Torah is directly dictated from God to Moshe. It's God's very word. Sifrei Nevuah, the books of the prophets, are, well, prophecies that prophets receive. Prophecies that other prophets other than Moshe received were not directly from God. They were more hinted to them or via an angel in a dream. And it's their interpretation of what they received. And in Ksuvim, we presume is written with what we call in the Gemara, Ruach HaKodesh. It's written with, I'll translate as divine inspiration. So when David HaMelech, for instance, wrote Sefer Tehillim, when he wrote Psalms, it wasn't dictated to him by God. It wasn't based on a prophecy, but whatever it means, we believe that God gave him a special form of godly inspiration that enabled him to write something that is not secular at all, but is divine to a certain degree. And that's what the books of writings, Ksuvim, are. So Esther is in the third section, or is it? So Shmuel says, so the question is, are you saying that Shmuel holds that Esther was not written with Ruach HaKodesh? Bamar Shmuel, Esther Ruach HaKodesh Nemra. After all, Shmuel says that Esther was written with Ruach HaKodesh. So we have a bit of a contradiction. On one hand, you're telling me that Esther cannot be Metameis Yadayim, that it doesn't render you ritually impure by touching it. But on the other hand, you're telling me it was written with Ruach HaKodesh, which would indicate that it should be included in Tanakh. So which one is it? So this is a really important principle here that we've referenced before. Nemra likros vel nemra lichtov. Perhaps Shmuel holds that the book of Esther was given to us for the purpose of reading it, but not for the purpose of writing it down. What does that mean? We'll explain that in a moment. There's a Tosafot on here. I just want to get to the end of the Gemara, but we actually discussed what it could potentially mean. Maybe you're just supposed to read the Megillah. You're not supposed to, we mentioned maybe you're not supposed to learn through the Megillah, Be'ion. But then we said, that's ridiculous. Why do I have a whole Maseches Megillah where we're deriving halachos from Megillah? It's not just, Megillah. I know I'm preaching to the choir over here. But Megillah is not just something you come once a year, twice a year to shul and hear it at night and in the morning. But like what we're doing right now, you can spend a whole year learning Maseches Megillah. But this would resolve the issue. It's written with Ruach HaKodesh, but it's not meant to be written down. It's not meant to be put into Tanakh. So it occupies this really odd liminal space. I don't know if anyone ever watched Star Wars or Revenge of the Sith. This will fall on deaf ears likely, but there's a line where Anakin wants to be on the Jedi Council, and the Master Mace Windu says, "You're on the Council, but we do not grant you the rank of Master." So that's basically what's happening here with Esther, that she's on the council but doesn't get ranked master. Okay, I know this is completely generational, but maybe someone years from now will be watching this recording and they'll get my joke. Okay. Mesmei, Rabbi Meir Omer, Koheles Enam Atayim Ayasiya Atayim. So we have a question here. Zebraisa that tells us that Koheles, Ecclesiastes, is not Matam Ayasiya Atayim. So Koheles is not part of Tanakh. Umachlokis b'shir ashirim. And the Song of Songs, Shir Shirim, is debatable. Rabbi Yossi Omer, this is interesting. We have a dispute about whether there is a dispute of something being included in Tanakh. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shir Shirim, and Tanakh, no. Shir Shirim is certainly part of Tanakh. Machlokis b'Koheles. What do we argue about? What's unclear? Whether Koheles should be canonized. And Rabbi Shimon Omer, this is the important line. Koheles b'Klei Beis Hillel. Well, Koheles is from the leniencies, is one of the few examples where Beis Shammai was lenient, Beis Hillel was machmir, they were stringent, meaning that Beis Shammai was makel, they didn't include it in Tanakh, thus it doesn't render you tameh, whereas Beis Hillel did include it in Tanakh, and thus it would render you tameh, which is a chumrah. Avol Rus, Beshir Ashirim, Ve'Esther, Metamen Esayadayim. But the book of Esther, indisputably, does render one tummy. So it's very obvious from here that Esther, this is a Tanyanic source, that Esther is part of our Jewish canon of Tanakh. So who are you, Shmuel, to come along and tell me that Esther is not a part of Tanakh? So the answer is, he holds like Rabbi Yeshua from the previous section of Gemara. Remember we had that whole machlokis, how to parse the pasuk? We had that whole machlokis, how to parse the pasuk, right? Shtileshim lo ribeim. So there was one opinion that said, no, there's the book of Shemos, Devarim, and Sefer Shmuel. There ain't no room for Esther. Sorry, all of our slots were taken up. You came too late. You can't be included in Tanakh. That's who he holds like. And so what you walk away with here is this fascinating machlokis on the books about whether Esther should really be in our Tanakh. So you don't have to feel guilty if you never went through the whole thing then, because maybe it's not part of Tanakh. You know, it'd be interesting when they do the 9-2-9 cycle or the Nach Yomi cycle. Imagine someone's like, yeah, you know, I poskin like Rabbi Yeshua. We don't need to learn Megillas Esther. That'd be funny. any questions? Okay, so take a look. Glance at Tosos on top of the page, on top of our daf over here. Nemar likros velo lichtov. So what exactly does that mean? That Esther is meant to be read, but not written. Can we understand what that means? So Tosos writes, and Rashi seems to indicate this as well, mashma desavar de mutter likrosa al peh. You know what this indicates? A huge chiddush. What's it mean it's meant to be read but not written down? It means I don't need to even read from Megillas Esther. If I can memorize Megillas Esther by heart and then read it for someone on Purim, it would count. I don't even need, unlike Kriyas HaTorah, where you need to look in the Torah, for Megillas Esther, you could read it bal peh. And you know what?
Good luck with that.
What was that, Henry?
I said, good luck with that.
Well, good. You know, I would say, actually, I think certain people, you know, who like, it takes so much practice to lay in the Megillah that I feel like there are certain people that have done so many times that they sort of are reading it by heart, if you know what I mean. Meaning they're looking inside because you have to, but I don't know. I feel like you went over to Nat Sandberg or someone, or Henry, are you a Megillah leaner also?
Yeah, but I couldn't do it by pet. No way.
Yeah, so. Yeah, but I feel like you went over to like a Nat Sandberg guy. I feel like by now, like he lanes like 80 times each firm or something, not to minimize what other people do. So, all right, but that's correct. That is correct. It's not an easy feat, but fundamentally you could. However, Tosa says, this doesn't seem to make any sense for a few reasons. Ukasha, they didn't pull out stop mission, they'll come in the parak base. We're going to learn later on in the second parak of Megillah, the Tani Kar al Peh lo yatsa. It says explicitly, yep. If you read it, al peh, if you read it orally, not from the text, you do not fulfill the mitzvah Megillah. So that's a pretty stark contradiction there. Furthermore, Rav Nami Huda Amar Lekaman on New Testament Aleph, Shitzrach Lekosa Lutov from Megiddin, that there's a requirement to write it down. And in fact, there's even parameters for how it has to be sewn with the sinews. So we have indication after indication, or not just indication, explicit statements telling me that I need to read the Megillah from the Megillah text. So that doesn't seem to be an acceptable interpretation of Nemra Likros Velo Lichtav. So therefore, Tosa says, L'kach Nir L'Farish, Tahadah Kamar Lo Nisna Lichtav, Baruach HaKodesh. This is how we explained it earlier. What's it mean that I'm not supposed to write it down? It means you're not, it's not meant to be written and canonized into Tanakh. However, Alhamid Rabban, this looked over the coast. Nonetheless, the Rabbanan said for the mitzvah of reading the Megillah, even if it's not necessarily part of the Tanakh, nonetheless, Mid Rabban, we're obligating you to read it. And that's what it means that we write it down in the end of the day. That's when we reconcile those halachos. Okay. So I figured that Tosis was important to share. And now back to our featured presentation. Back to the Gemara. Tanya. Rav Shimon ben Menasseh over Koheles Inu Tanya Sedam Mishach Achmasel Shel Shlomo. This is not some academic Bible scholar talking here. This is a Rav Shimon ben Menasseh. This is a Brisa. that he is saying Koheles is not part of Tanakh. Why? Because it's just ancient proverbs from Shlomo HaMelech. You know, like one time I was speaking to like a friend who's a non-religious Jew, and he was trying to explain to another non-religious Jew what Pirkei Avos is. So he's like, oh, it's like the Jewish version of Zen Buddha quotes. So we treat it a little bit more important than that. But you know, Havdol Afi Avdolos, that's basically what he's saying, same for the Svarma of Shlomo HaMelech, or at least this one of Koheles. There's actually...
I've read Koheles, and I view it as more than just a collection of proverbs. It is actually a statement of Jewish philosophy of life.
Agreed. I don't think Rosh Hashanah Menasi is trying to minimize that. But for instance, I mean, you could read Nesiyas Yesharim. You could read Derech Hashem. You could read the Shara Gemul. You could read Mor Nevuchim. There's so many great books. You read the Gemara. But the Gemara, despite what some might say, was not written with Ruach HaKodesh, at least in our current definition of Ruach HaKodesh. It doesn't take away from the importance and the reverence one must have for the Gemara, for the Mishnah, for rabbinic literature, but Gemara is not going to be canonized into Tanakh. That's all he's saying. Yeah, certainly we don't want to minimize its importance. There's a good reason why there was, at least according to this person, a Havim.
How about Shir HaShirim?
What was that?
How about Shir HaShirim?
So as we know, that's a subject of dispute. Rabbi Akiva comes in later and says, what do you mean? Shir HaShirim is the Kodesh Kadosh, the Holy of Holies, mm-hmm. and we accept that. So Shir HaShirim, there was reason not to accept Shir HaShirim, for obvious yep. reasons, but it made it in nonetheless. Okay. You know, it's I was once at a Purim Suda with a friend of mine named David Sellis. So he's like more with like the JTS, like conservative kind of crowd. And he's like all into like the Wissenschaft and all the Jewish academic stuff. So his icebreaker that he likes to do is, if there's something that you could decanonize from Jewish tradition and recanonize something else in its place, what would you do? So I said, Shir HaShirim. I thought it was a pretty safe bet, considering many people say it shouldn't be in the canon to begin with. I put the Silmarillion instead from J.R.R. Tolkien. But okay, that's pardon for you. Amar Lo, they responded, V'chizubel v'ad, Amar? Is that it? It's just wisdom from Shlomo? It's just like self-help? Well, it's definitely not self-help book. That's not a right way to characterize it. But look for Nemar, by Dabar Shoshel, up in Mashal. Shlomo HaMelech taught 3,000 proverbs, 3,000 different parables. And so 3,000 parables he taught, and Koheles is only a portion of the 3,000 that he taught. So why would Shlomo HaMelech narrow it down? Because certain mashalim were said with Ruach HaKodesh, that's what gets canonized into Tanakh, and the mashalim that were just general wisdoms of Solomon, those did not get canonized into Tanakh. V'omer, furthermore, it says, Al Tosif Al Devarav, that you shall not add on to his words. My V'omer, why do we add on this positive? Hitema Memar Tuva Amar, Di Bai Ichta Vidi Bai Lo Ichtiv. Because lest you say that, hey, look, he had 3,000 great ideas. Some he wrote down, some he didn't feel like writing down. Lest you think to say that, Tashima al Tosav al Dvarav, he warns you, do not add on to any of his words, because the words that he did write down were the ones that were written Beruach HaKodesh, and those remain canonized in Tanakh for all future generations. That's the end of our discussion of Koheles. Moving forward, back to Esther. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Esther Baruch HaKodesh Nemra. So Eliezer is not giving up the fight here. We have a brisa where he says, Esther was written with Ruach HaKodesh. It's written with divine inspiration. Shenemar, Vayomer, so we're going to have basically five and then eventually seven different proofs that Megillas Esther had to have been written with Ruach HaKodesh. I mean, there's certain things that are stated in the Megillah that supposedly there's no way a human being would know that these things were true. And so the fact that certain things were written indicates that there must have been some divine inspiration that told the authors what to write in the Megillah, give them a sense of what to write in the Megillah. So Eliezer Omer, Esther Kodesh, Shnemar, Shnemar, Vayomer Haman Belibo, because it says in the Pasuk that Haman said to himself in his heart. So I don't know, how am I supposed to know what Haman is thinking? Must have been written with Ruach HaKodesh. Right? Kiva Omer, Esther Ruach HaKodesh, Shnemar, Shnemar, but he Esther knows his chayim b'ni kol ra'eha. I don't know. Was there a Gallup poll? Did they poll people to know that she found favor in all their eyes? Must have been written with Ruach HaKodesh. Rabbi Omer, Esther Ruach HaKodesh, Shnemar, Shnemar, b'yivada davar leMordechai. Well, how did Mordechai know what was going on? I believe that's in the context of Big Son and Zeresh. How did he know what his servants were? It's good. I have Henry here, who's our leader, so he knows all these psukim like this. So the Gemara makes it clear also that's Big Son and Zeresh later on, if you don't want to look at the psukim. So how did Mordechai know what they were talking about? Without Ruach HaKodesh. Rabbi Yosef ben Damascus Omer, Esther Ruach HaKodesh, Nevesh Nemar. That when the Jewish people were exacting, I don't know, exact vengeance or fighting a defensive war, however you want to put it, they did not plunder. How would we know they didn't plunder? That's a really hard thing to figure out, that no one plundered. Must have been written with Ruach HaKodesh. Amar Shmuel, finally, for now, if I was there, Hava Mina Mils, I would have given you the best proof of them all. Shenamar, Kimu v'kiblu, Kimu l'mala, mashiku l'mata. It says in the Pasuk that when they reaffirmed and they accepted the Torah, so it says that which, Kimu l'mala, shekimu l'mata, that which we established down here, they accepted up there in heaven. So how would I know that in heaven they accepted what we chose to do down here? Well, that's where Ruach HaKodesh comes in. Amar Rav Lakula Isu Pircha Lebar Min Shmo De Leis Mi Pircha. All of these different suggestions for how we see that there was Ruach HaKodesh in the writing of Megillas Esther, excuse me, all of these proofs are refutable except for Shmuel's suggestion. Rabbi Eliezer Sfarahu Dula Havet Inish Dachash Lamalka Kavase. What's it mean that Haman said in his heart that, oh, Achashverosh must be wanting to honor me? Well, it's reasonable for Haman to think that. Haman, after all, is the second to the king. And if the king says, you know, I want to honor somebody, it's not unreasonable for Haman to think that he was due for another accolade of some kind. So, Lav Davka is a Ruach HaKodesh from there. Next, the Rabbi Kiva, Dilma Krabi of Lassa, Damar Malamish, Echav Echa Nidmasa Lakamaso. His proof is that Esther found favor in everyone's eyes. So we said, oh, Ruach HaKodesh. Who's to say that? There's a tradition that basically everybody must have been racist. And because of that, God made Esther look like she was from everyone else's nation. So, if I was this skin color, then she looked like this skin color to me. If I'm from this nation, if I'm from Spain, she looked like a Spaniard to me. If I'm from Germany, she looked like a German to me. That's the tradition that they had. So that's with that tradition in mind, we don't need Ruach HaKodesh to tell me that. We have a tradition that Esther was appealing to all the different people because she looked like she was from their nation. How did Mordechai know what Big Son and Zeresh were plotting about? Well, because Mordechai was a member of the Sanhedrin. And the members of the Sanhedrin, remember when we learned in Makos that in order to receive testimony from someone, you can't do it via a translator. You have to hear it directly from the mouths of the witnesses. And so therefore, members of the great Supreme Court, the Sanhedrin, they had to be fluent in all the different various languages so that they could accept testimony from virtually anyone. So therefore, Mordechai, they thought that they were speaking in a foreign language and nobody would understand. Mordechai understood what they were saying, and he knew that they were plotting to kill the king. It's still kind of a funny thing when you think about it. Like, you're thinking, like, you're going to try assassinating the world. You would have, like, a few more precautions than just using different language. You know, it's like you hear these stories where you go to a store and, like, they speak Russian or they speak Spanish and they think you don't know it, or, like, Hebrew. And then they start cursing you behind your back. And you're like, yeah, I understood that. Thank you. So that's basically what's going on over here.
The question on that one, though, is the word vayivada implies that there was some indirect
confirmation.
Just from the grammar, it doesn't sound like it was a direct Mordechai yada vayiv, right? Instead of vayivada.
It became known to him
as opposed to Mordechai knew, right?
So, right. It sounds passive. It's almost like he received some sort of divine message.
Yeah, that
does sound like it. Yeah. I hear your point. That's probably the Havamina.
Right.
So the Hadra Yossi ben Dormascus Dilma Prisatki Shador. So how do we know that Jews didn't pillage when they were defending themselves? Well, why do I need Ruach HaKodesh? They sent mail. They sent messengers to tell us that. That's how we knew. The Shmuel Vale Lysi Pircha, but Shmuel is pointing back Kim of a Kiblu. That we couldn't find any refutations. Amar Abina, Hayu the Amri Inshi Tobachada Palpalta Charifta Imolid Sane Kari. And this is what it means when we're going to have a lot of expressions tonight. Our first expression of tonight is that one sharp pepper is better than a basket full of either pumpkins or melons, depending on what translation you look at. I saw multiple translations of this word. I think Art Scroll used melon, and virtually everything else I looked at translated as pumpkin. Point being
is... It depends what your object is.
Yeah, so the point being is that this one sharp pepper, Shmuel, was better than the rest of the bunch. That's the point. Two more suggestions for how we know Esther was Rambam Ruach HaKodesh. Rav Yosef Amar Mehacha, well, how would I know that Purim will never cease to be practiced by Jews? That seems to be an assertion that one can only make with Ruach HaKodesh. And then finally, that their memory will never be gathered in, will never be taken away from their children. Same idea. How can you guarantee that? Must be you have Ruach HaKodesh. End of the Gemara here. And as you can see, we are now going to explore another concept from our Mishnah. So we said in the Mishnah, Matanos Lev Yonim, giving gifts to the poor, as well as Mishloach Manos, is something that we do on Purim. And if you haven't been doing it, well, put on your checklist. And the way we do Matanos Lev Yonim, by the way, in giving gifts to the poor, or to the needy, rather, is that there are generally organizations. I believe in the past we've used JFS. And the important thing is that if JFS is going to be our shliach and distribute tzedakah for us, I believe they do. I really hope they do. We've got to look into it. They distribute it on the day of Purim itself. If they distribute it a day after Purim, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah matanos lev yonim. You have filled a nice mitzvah of giving tzedakah in general, but you've not fulfilled matanos lev yonim. The idea is that what you're giving to the needy should be used for their Suvas Purim. So if you give them, whether it be money or food after Purim, they can't use it for the Suvas Purim, for the Purim meal. So it's nice to give after Purim also, but you're not fulfilling Matanos Lev Yonim. So here we go. Tani Rav Yosef, Mishloach Manos, Ish L'Reihu, Shtei Manos L'Ish Echon. So how do I fulfill the Shlach Manos? I give two items to one individual. Whereas Matanos Lev Yonim, whereas the mitzvah to give something to the needy, Shnei Matanos L'Shnei Bnei Adam. It's giving to two individuals one gift each. Now, this is funny. Why is there such a distinction? Why is it two for Shlach Manos, but one per person from Matos of Yonim, one at minimum. The Ran says, because Matos of Yonim, rather Mishloach Manos, you're giving to your friend. And so if they are more financially well off, to give them just one thing might not be so celebratory. But Matos of Yonim, even giving one thing already brightens that person's day. And so that's why it's only one thing at minimum. But just to let you know, the halacha is that if you have this is the opposite of what everyone does. You know, many people will make like 100, 300 mishloach manos, and it'll be a whole theme. It will make this, put this thing into it and that thing into it, and cupcakes and licorice and, I don't know. People make these entire themes and pour a lot of money into it for mishloach manos. But really, actually, if one has limited resources, better to make your mishloach manos a little bit more modest and actually use that same money to increase the amount of tzedakah, the amount of matzos of yom that you're giving. Because the true simcha of any holiday is not filling our own bellies, is not just indulging ourselves and those close to us, but it's making sure that those who can't celebrate are able to celebrate and have what they need. That's the true simcha of Yom Tov. Okay. Back to the Gemara. So now a few stories about giving mishloach manos. So we'll end with this. Rayuna siya shadalei the Rabbi Oshia atma de iglo tflasa who garva de chame. So Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, he sent the thigh of a third calf. Apparently, the third calf that's born to a cow is supposed to be the highest quality, as well as he gave a cask of wine as well. Shalachlei kayamta banu rabbeinu mishloach manos ishrei v'shkoyach. You fulfill the mitzvah of mishloach manos, and we don't have time for this, possibly matanos leviyotim as well. Rava shadalei lamari bar mar v'yadabai mole taska de kashba. Rava sent to Mari Bar Mar, he used the Baye as his messenger. So he sent him a full basket of dates, umale kasakacha de av shona, as well as a full cup of a flour of roasted wheat flour. Amarle Abaye, Hasha Amar Mari. This is what Mari is going to say back when he gets this low quality gift. Rebbe, you got promoted. I think he was the Rosh Hashiva Pumpadisa. So you became a king. You have a high status in society. So have you not taken the basket off of your neck? In other words, to say you become this rich and famous individual, and you're still giving me this low quality mishloach manos. You're just giving me like a licorice and another candy. So Hadar Shadarle Ihu Ihu Mole Tuska di Zangavila Umale Kasa di Palpsa Aricha. So he sent him back a package with ginger, as well as a cup with long peppers, spicy peppers. So spicy peppers get two mentions tonight. Amar Abai Hash Amar Mar. But now he's going to respond to, I sent you something sweet and you sent me back something spicy. Apparently you could tell they're Ashkenazi, because getting something spicy is frowned upon. If they were smarty, they would appreciate it. So you could tell he's Ashkenazi, by the way. Just joking. All right, bye. He naf me be mar have savana. Abai said, when I left Mar's house and I arrived there, so when I left, I was satisfied. And when I arrived, they gave me 60 plates of 60 forms of boiled food. And I ate a piece from each one of these 60 dishes. And the final dish was called pot roast. Sli keder, sli roast, and keder is the kedera, boils a pot roast. Ubay lemechas saw abasa, I want to eat the plate afterwards. Amar Abai, This is what it means when people say, there's a phrase that people say that the poor person was hungry and he didn't even realize it. You know, like, I thought I was satiated, but then I got here and I saw the food that he was serving me. I was like, oh, now I got some room. Inami, Rav Kalibis Mashkiach. There's always room for dessert. So, you know that idea when you're old kids and, you know, your parents probably said to you, you got to finish your broccoli, you got to finish your green beans, and then you can have dessert. I don't have any room left to eat the green beans. And all of a sudden the cake comes out. You have room. So that's what Abai is saying. There's always room to eat dessert. Now, we don't have time to go through this entire Chasam Sofer. But the Chasam Sofer says, and this is a good lesson in reading Agadatas. We're going to have a lot of stranger Agadatas in the Gemara. And these aren't just fancies of the rabbis, but actually they're generally indicating something deeper. So what's it mean Abai was hungry, was satisfied when he left? When he left from his Rebbe, he thought he was already satisfied, and he basically knew all the Torah he needed to know. But when he got to Mari's home, he realized that out of all these mesechtas, there was still more for him to eat. He still wasn't fully satiated, and that's what it means that there was room for dessert. And also the notion of him ending off talking about Sli Keder, it's referring to how they got to the final Maseches Pesachim. Then they were talking about the case of Sli Keder, which is if you can't, you're supposed to roast the Karan Pesach, but what if you boil it within its own liquids? Is that kosher for Karan Pesach or not? So we don't have time to really go through all the details, but just to show you that this is really a lesson in Talmud Torah, that agadatas tend to have much more meaning below the surface than one might let on. Because if you don't learn agadatas of Mefarshim, you'll walk out saying these rabbis are just a bunch of, God forbid, like lunatics. You know, they just like come out with these weird things that they put in the Gemara. What's that have to do with anything? So it's usually a deeper message if one can mine the meaning out of it. So what Abai is saying is that, you know, you think that you're satisfied and you had enough Torah to learn, but you know what? There's always room for another chiddush. There's always room for something more to learn. That's what he is conveying to us. So a beautiful drasha of the Chasam Sofer. One last little line in the Gemara. Abai bar Oven, Rechidia bar Oven, Mechabi Sudai Sai Lahadadi. They would exchange Mishloach Manos with each other. So when I was in Shalavim, in Eretz Yisrael, you know what I'm going to say already? I wasn't making Mishloach Manos. And I definitely was very frugal with my money. I was like, I'm not going to make all these Mishloach Manos packages. I don't want to give away my own food. Like, this is my food. Because the food in the cafeteria, it's improved since I've been there. But it was Israeli food, like Israeli yeshiva food. That's like the lowest of the low. Sometimes, you know, we used to joke, I don't know if I can make a bracha on this food. I don't know, it might not be roi l'achilas kelem. You know, it might not be edible. So what we did was, my roommate and I, we just went to the Makolet. We went to the convenience store on campus. We bought two items, and then we exchanged them with each other. And we fulfilled Mishloach Manos by doing that year. And that way, we filled the mitzvah, and also we were still good Jews and frugal with our money. So we fulfilled many mitzvahs in that regard.
Rabbi, okay. Why does the pasuk refer to feasts rather than...
Sorry, I missed that.
The pasuk refers to feasts rather than Mishloach Manos.
Where are we looking at?
What you just read, right?
Oh, right. So just say about
it. The pieces one another. I mean, in the Art Scroll, that's how it's translated. Is that not right? Or
let me check. I actually go look at the first. We look at Rashi. So Rashi has a different understanding than I did of it. He's saying is that 1 year he would eat by his house and the next year he'd eat by his house. But I thought that was one of the interpretations of Mechabis and Yisayla Adadi, because the idea of giving Mishloach Manos to each other is that Mishloach Manos could be eaten as your Suda. So I have to look at we'll pick up with that.
That's in the commentary, yeah.
Yeah, well, the commentary got it from Rashi, I bet. Our school generally will.
Many years, Rabbi, before you were at Shalavim, we exchanged plates at the in the yeshiva. We did it. Like everyone took their food.
Very good. So I'm glad.
And I think that's the one shot here is that they just exchange the plates.
Right. So I think that's okay. You know what? I'll look at the Mefarshim on this one next time to see if we get some other interpretations. But you're correct, Tony, to point out that Rashi says that they would switch off years who would host the Purim Sudah. Okay. Wonderful. We're at 8:27. We will conclude here, wishing everyone a wonderful Shabbos. And a reminder for those who are in the Sunday morning Chumash class, our theme is a Sunday, and I'll invite all of you. We're God willing, in March, in the second week of March, we will embark on learning Sefer HaChinuch, going through the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. So if that's of interest, learning Sefer HaChinuch, God willing, we'll start that soon in a few weeks. And you could be in touch with me if you have an interest in joining, 9:15 on Sunday mornings.
Rabbi, right, I have quite a question about the Siyam, a quick question on the Siyam. If somebody's related to somebody who was, you know, one of the departed class members, should they come?
Yeah, just sign up. Just like make sure to let Kim know as soon as possible because I think going shopping early tomorrow morning if he hasn't gone yet.
So yeah. Some final numbers. Okay.
But yeah, certainly. I think that would be very appropriate. Thank you for checking. Okay. All right. Good Shabbos, everyone.
Okay.
All right.